You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Don Guerra.
And I'm Leanne Moroz. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, July 31st, 2018.
It's time-consuming, first of all, and it's expensive. Particularly, this kind of provision would have disproportionately impacted low-income women and rural women.
Later in the program, we'll hear from Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky CEO Christy Gillespie. The Indiana chapter of the ACLU and Planned Parenthood won a lawsuit last week, which challenged a 2016 law requiring women seeking an abortion to undergo an ultrasound before the operation. WFHB News Director Wes Martin brings us that report later in the program.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Dan Combs talks about the strange and wonderful history of Perry Township in part one of this three-part installment. That's coming up in this week's edition of the Bicentennial Journal, looking back on 200 years of history in South Central Indiana. But first, your daily headlines.
The Monroe County Community School Corporation is hosting a public forum tonight at 6 p.m. in Bloomington. MCCSC is inviting community members to weigh in on whether or not the school district should implement a metal detection program sponsored by Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb. The state of Indiana is releasing funds for school districts to purchase handheld metal detectors. The funds are part of a school safety initiative championed by Governor Holcomb earlier this year. MCCSC spokesman Andrew Clampett says the metal detectors are being released to school districts that want them in waves. Clampett says tonight's meeting at the MCCSC facility on East Miller Drive allows the school district to garner feedback before making a decision.
We did not elect to reserve, you know, the total number of scanners that we could in this first wave. We instead have scheduled a community conversation for tomorrow, July 31st at 6 p.m. in our MCCSC co-lab to take input from our community on the topic.
Governor Holcomb's initiative allows the state to allocate one handheld metal detector to be available for every 150 students. Clampett says tonight's community discussion is meant to gauge how the public wants MCCSC to approach the school safety initiative, whether they want them to partake in the program, and if so, how.
We've got several people that are going to be available to speak on the subject, but more or less it's just going to talk about more into the specifics of what that would look like in our own school corporation. Each school corporation, each school is unique in their opportunities and challenges. When they would go to implement something such as a wand or a scanner, if you will. And, you know, again, what does that look like? What does that mean for us if we have one scanner for every 150 students? Do you scan every kid coming in the school every day at every school during the day? Is it random, extracurricular activities? All of those topics are going to be available and up for discussion. The event is free and open to the public, and we encourage those that are interested in this particular topic to come out and provide input.
Tonight's public meeting over the handheld metal detector initiative takes place at MCCSC's facility at 553 East Miller Drive at 6 p.m. in Bloomington.
Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton is proposing the hiring of five additional public safety officers to the Bloomington Police Department. Hamilton is expected to put the proposal before the city's budgetary meeting later in August. City of Bloomington Communications Director Yael Cassander says the five proposed officers would ultimately act as community liaisons rather than law enforcement officials.
The addition of these officers, one, of course, who will, strictly speaking, be a sworn police officer. The other four, three of which will be in the police department and one of which will be in community and family resources department, are non-sworn positions. So they're not officers, strictly speaking. They're safety, public safety officials, but they have roles that are meant to be preventive or diversionary. So these people are going to be charged with creating connections in the community and providing services more than any sort of enforcement. So being not only eyes and ears on the street, but really creating liaisons in the community and being a liaison between people in town, residents, business owners, et cetera, and government, and providing services, directing people to resources that they need. Whether if someone needs, you know, a pair of shoes, for example, there's no reason to get a badged officer involved. You know, rather, one of our neighborhood resource specialists or the social worker that we're proposing for the police department would be a more appropriate person to connect that person in need with services.
The proposal from Mayor Hamilton's office comes under the recommendations of the City's Safety, Civility, and Justice Task Force. That task force included recommendations for a greater police presence in downtown, which often displaced individuals experiencing hopelessness. Cassandra says the five proposed officers would work in tandem with BPD to mitigate the law enforcement approach to engaging with homeless individuals.
People who are experiencing homelessness are one of the populations that we hope to benefit from this initiative, for sure. But really, I think we'd like to think about these positions more broadly. You know, the neighborhood resource specialists, for example, are people who are going to be clued into neighborhoods across Bloomington, not just downtown or Kirkwood. And they're going to be your go-to folks for things like welfare checks, making sure that people in the community who are elderly, people in your neighborhood who don't get a lot of visitors are okay. Resolving disputes between neighbors, making sure code violations are attended to. You know, they're going to be your connection to city services. Kind of it's like kid glove sort of service, your ambassador or your liaison to the city. The folks who are experiencing homelessness in the community are also very much in mind and front and center in terms of these considerations.
Cassandra says Hamilton's five proposed additional public safety officials would not be sworn in positions and would prioritize providing services to communities rather than enforcing the law. Hamilton's proposal would place four of those positions under the Bloomington Police Department, with the final position added to the city's Community and Family Resources Department. Cassandra says the five additional positions come from a conversation with IU's School of Social Work.
We had a social work professor from the IU School of Social Work to talk about the specifically the social work position that's being proposed. That position and the night ambassador or after-hours ambassador or night mayor, you might even call it, position, both of those positions are really new in the U.S. in terms of the ranks of public safety. There are very few departments, actually, across the country that have a social worker on staff, police departments, that is. And so the hope is that with the addition of this position, there can be a more appropriate assignment for people's needs than is traditionally allocated to, say, enforcement. So it is actually exciting. Bloomington has the opportunity here to sort of lead the charge with regard to community policing and the police department serving as a provider of services.
Mayor Hamilton's proposal is expected to go before the city's next budgetary hearing meeting on August 20th.
Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb is calling for a renewed push towards passing hate crime legislation in the state. Holcomb's call comes after the weekend vandalism of a Jewish synagogue in Carmel, Indiana. The state is one of five across the country which has not ratified independent hate crimes legislation. Anti-Semitic graffiti was found at the entrance to the Carmel synagogue over the weekend. The suspect spray-painted a Nazi flag flanked by iron crosses at the facility's entrance. Carmel police are inspecting the incident, but no arrests have been made in connection to the vandalism. Previous efforts to pass hate crime legislation in the state have died in the State House. Representative Matt Pierce says those bills were largely left to die in committee without being brought up for a vote on the State House floor.
Hate crimes bills have been considered off and on for years in the legislature, and some years it'll pass out of one house and not the other, and it has to do with who's chairing the committee. And then when the Republicans are in control, their caucuses kind of decide which bills are going to come to the floor. And the most recent attempt, apparently the Senate Republican caucus decided that if they passed a hate crimes bill that included protections for the LGBTQ community, that would cause them political problems with their social conservative base of their party. And so I'd heard rumors that perhaps the governor said, don't send me a bill if you don't have that in, because it's just going to create a lot of controversy that's worse than not doing anything. And so consequently, nothing happened. So I'm very pleasantly surprised that the governor has come forth and said he would like to see us finally get something on the books so we're not one of those five states that doesn't have some kind of criminal code addressing hate crimes in our state.
Pierce says Governor Holcomb's decision to back hate crimes legislation could signal a shift in the legislators' desire to pass a hate crimes bill, but says residents would have to wait until January to know whether a measure will be proposed.
Well, nothing can happen until the legislature goes back into session, and as you said, that really gets going in January. But in the meantime, there will be the Interim Study Committee on Corrections and Criminal Code has been assigned the issue of studying bias crimes, so that will probably be the first focus, because that committee could decide what, if any, shape a bias crimes or hate crimes bill would take. And then probably what's really going to decide things is what the governor has to say behind the scenes with the leadership of the Republican caucuses and the legislature. Because the legislature doesn't always do what a governor wants them to do, but usually the Republicans will kind of take their cue from their governor. So I think that has the potential to give a hate crimes bill some momentum. But the question is the governor going to be willing to kind of get in there and fight for it and behind the scenes say, I really want to get this done? And so that's the question that remains to be seen.
Pierce says it's not clear what, if any, shape a proposed hate crimes bill could take, but he expects that it would further strengthen Indiana's biased crimes legislation. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Leanne Murrows.
And I'm Don Guerra. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com. Last week, the Indiana chapter of the ACLU and Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky won a lawsuit over a 2016 law against the state of Indiana. WFHB News Director Wes Martin brings us that report.
On March 24, 2016, then-Governor Mike Pence signed into law House Enrolled Act 1337. The law introduced additional stipulations on abortion procedures throughout the state, including a measure which required women seeking an abortion to receive an ultrasound 18 hours before an abortion procedure. Now, over 2 years later, Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky, along with the Indiana chapter of the ACLU, have won a suit against the state. Planned Parenthood and the ACLU claimed the ultrasound procedure placed an undue burden on women seeking an abortion. Here's Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky CEO Christy Gillespie.
First of all, I think it's important to clarify that we don't object to an ultrasound at all. We, in fact, do ultrasounds prior to any abortion procedure. That is best practices, in terms of medical care. The objection here is requiring patients to have the ultrasound done 18 hours prior to the procedure. And that places an undue burden on patients who would then have to travel to their provider twice in order to have an abortion procedure. It's time consuming, first of all, and it's expensive. Particularly, this kind of provision would have disproportionately impacted low-income women and rural women, because as you probably know, there are very limited facilities in our state now that provide abortion care. You know, women have to travel, or patients have to travel at the minimum, in some cases, an hour, 2 hours, or 3 hours to get abortion care if they want it. And requiring an ultrasound 18 hours in advance would require the patient to have to make that trip twice. And if you are a patient that happens to work at a low-wage job, or any job, frankly, you would have to get time off of work for both the trips. If you have other children, you have to figure out how are you going to find child care for both of those trips. And then just additionally, the cost of traveling. So first and foremost, I would characterize this as a victory for our patients. Our mission is to provide comprehensive reproductive health care, and that includes abortion care. And this is a legal and safe procedure, and our patients and women are perfectly capable of evaluating their lives and what kinds of health care that they need. And they don't need additional regulations that interfere with their ability to access care like this. This is about patients and people receiving the health care that is safe and legal.
House Enrolled Act 1337 also contained additional restrictions on abortion. Beyond the requirement of women seeking an abortion to receive an ultrasound, Planned Parenthood of Indiana, Kentucky CEO Christy Gillespie says those restrictions have also been found to be unconstitutional. But that's taken over 2 years of legal wrangling.
That has already made its way through the courts. The Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals recently ruled that all of those contested parts of the law are unconstitutional. And I think that we're just waiting now to see if the state of Indiana is going to appeal that decision from the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. The courts have been very responsive that when we have filed preliminary injunctions, they have responded, I think, in almost all cases, before these laws would go into effect. And so, you know, when they rule prior to the date, the effective date, then the law doesn't go into effect until a final decision is made in the court. So in that respect, the courts have actually been very responsive. I think what I would leave your listeners with is that if the state of Indiana and our legislature is really, really and truly interested in reducing the abortion rate in our state, the best way to do that is to ensure that there is low-cost, affordable birth control available, and secondly, that there's comprehensive sex education. And those are the two things that are proven to reduce the abortion rate. And until our state embraces those two strategies, it's really hard to take seriously that their primary concern is to reduce the abortion rate, because that's what will do it. And Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky does more than any other organization to ensure that those two things happen.
Gillespie says Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky is challenged not only by the Republican supermajority in the State House, but also by local actors. Earlier in July, the reproductive health nonprofit shut down their clinic in Fort Wayne, Indiana, citing an allegedly hostile church-going community in the area, harassing its physicians, nurses, and patients.
Fort Wayne is a city with enormous need, and we have been in that city, had been in that city since 1932, providing a variety of reproductive health care. And by the way, I would like to just again mention that at that particular health center, we did not provide abortion care. And, you know, it's a shame that a small group of vocal people can behave in that manner that would impact the health care of many in the city. And one of the reasons we wanted to bring this to light is it's really time, I think, for all of us to think about, is this the kind of behavior that is acceptable where you target, intimidate, and harass people who are doing nothing but merely doing their job?
Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky, along with the Indiana chapter of the ACLU, won their lawsuit against House Enroll Act 1337 last week. For WFHB, I'm Wes Martin.
That was WFHB News Director Wes Martin speaking with Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky CEO Christy Gillespie. Support for WFHB comes from listeners like you and from IU Health Foundation, where local gifts stay local, serving patients for a healthier Bloomington.
Coming up next, the Bicentennial Journal, looking back on 200 years of history in South Central Indiana.
Monroe County's Bicentennial Committee presents the Bicentennial Journal, stories celebrating the rich history of Monroe County.
This is my Monroe County story. I'm Dan Combs. I'm a trustee, Perry Township. People constantly say, what is a township? Well, a township is actually a surveying device. Thomas Jefferson gets credit for proposing it, but in the 1785 ordinances of the Northwest Territory, it was determined by the federal government that townships would be the way to determine property boundaries within the Northwest Territories. A township was established as being a 6-mile-long by 6-mile-wide measurement. Within that township, there would then be 36 square miles, each square mile called a section. Monroe County's townships were laid out mostly in a survey in 1812, which was then completed in 1819. The original survey only went to the 10 o'clock line. The 1819 survey then included the lands to the north of the 10 o'clock line. The 10 o'clock line is located in the northeast part of the county in Yellowwood Forest. It runs from the southeast to the northwest. After this survey was completed in 1819, lands north of the line were allowed to be sold. Lands south of the line were sold in 1816. Each township had one section of land, section number 16, that was sold for the public benefit. Section 16 lands were sold in order to fund local schools until development and property taxes could take the place. One of the things confusing about Monroe County and the townships is Seminary Township. The Northwest Ordinances called for township in each congressional district to be sold exclusively to fund the two state seminaries that were planned. In Monroe County, there's somewhat of an argument. Some maps show the two northernmost mile crossings of Perry Township to be Seminary Township. Others say the entire township was to fund the seminaries. So whichever way it goes, one of the things about Perry Township that is unique is we are directly related to the founding of Indiana University. The lands within Perry Township, at least some of them, were sold to directly fund the purchase and construction of the seminary located at 2nd and Walnut Streets in downtown Bloomington. Other things unique about townships and these surveys are the ways in which they were surveyed. Today, measurements are based on the decimal system, essentially 100 feet, 1/10 of a mile, 1/10 of an acre, things of that nature. In the 1700s and the early 1800s, property lines were measured with chains. Each chain was 66 foot long. Each chain had 100 links, and those links, therefore, were 7.92 inches apiece. When you go back on your abstract or your title insurance for your property, you will see these numbers constantly appearing, chains and links. what this did was, again, create smaller rectangles within the large rectangles of the townships. But there's an error built into the surveying change of that period. And that was where the two links come together. They would wear and rub against each other and eventually thin out. These chains for the surveyors were 100 links, and they were made of iron, and iron wears pretty quickly with friction. What this means is in the surveys that took hundreds of chains, you started building in incredible discrepancies. This is why in Monroe County and in Perry Township, surveyors come up with different corners for your lots, because these original chains, no one factored in how much the chain would wear.
Tune in next week for part two of this bicentennial story.
Support for the Bicentennial Journal and WFHB comes from Monroe County and Visit Bloomington. More information about Monroe County's Bicentennial is available at monroecounty200.us.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcast of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.
Listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
The Bicentennial Journal is produced by Kate Welch with help from Joyce Poling. Our engineer is Megan Wade. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumsdane, Scott Schmadke, and Danny Raff. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Leanne Moroz.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast as well as all other WFHB news programming online at wfhb.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
Stay tuned for Counterspin, fairness and accuracy in reporting's weekly radio show, providing a critical examination of national headlines. That's coming up next on WFHB.